right, here we go. Podcast, I guess this is number four. I did two with, yeah, we'll call it number four. Josh Bridges checking in. You know what I made that checking in for him? So we named the podcast Checking In. And like it sounds like, oh, Josh Bridges checking in. Checking in with Josh Bridges, you know? But it's from when you're at CQC and you're standing outside the door. Check in. Bridges checking in.
It makes sense now.
So there it is. That's why we call it Checking In. Hi, Reagan. All right. So podcast number four, we got Mr. Nick Norris. Longtime good friend, great dude, and I served—
Not just good dude.
Not just good dude, he's a great dude. The dude. And he, so I worked with Nick in the military. How I like to describe Nick to people is he's the baddest dude I've ever met with the most unassuming appearance.
I'm blushing.
With the most unassuming appearance. I'm like, this dude is a badass. So I always like to lead off. I actually witnessed him doing one-arm weighted pull-ups. I would hear the craziest stories about you from like Cam. But yeah, Nick's a great guy. No longer in the military. Actually, you tell us a little bit about yourself. Give him a little intro, Nick.
Yeah. Well, so I think you and I got introduced by Big Cam. I was actually thinking about that driving over here.
That's right.
So, and at some point, it would be a joy for everybody to get to meet Big Cam.
Oh man,
on the podcast.
If we got if we got Big Cam on the podcast, people would love it.
It gives me a reason to reach back out to that guy.
No.
So, Big Cam, we could probably talk for about an hour and a half specifically about that guy. But
right.
I did my first deployment with Cam, and then I think you guys.
So I met him out on his second deployment. Right.
Yep.
Yeah.
Or his third.
Yeah, his third.
It would be my second.
My straight out of SQT. I don't even know if you really want to call it a deployment, right? Uh-huh. It was like a little 2-month stint.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then he was like, I think the way he framed you to me is like, you have to meet this guy. You guys are like the same size. You might be a little taller.
False.
But but yeah, no, dude, he made the introduction. I think I remember going to a dinner party at his house. And yeah, he randomly threw dinner parties at his house.
That's right.
As an active duty Navy SEAL, he hosted dinner parties, which was a little unusual.
It was a little strange. But it was, I think it might have even been a fight, too.
I think it might have been
a UFC fight.
Yeah, so it was less strange.
Less strange.
Other nights were like soft jazz music. Right. 8-course dinners.
Him wearing the Skechers shape ups
with an apron, like kind of cooking like appetizers for everybody, bringing it out. We were introduced by Big Cam. Mm-hmm. But I guess to rewind, I mean, I grew up in Chicago. I think we both shared a background in wrestling.
Yeah.
I wrestled in high school and then. And then gave it up in college. I ended up going to the Naval Academy after growing up on the south side of Chicago, and then was lucky enough to pick up a billet into Buds. Went through with class 247, made it through first time. I got lucky. I didn't get injured and ended up going to SEAL Team 3, and then did my first deployment in 2006 to Al Anbar Province with SEAL Team 3. So same deployment that Jocko Willink led the troop in Ramadi, and we were to about 20 kilometers to the east of Ramadi on that deployment.
Okay.
So yeah, and then that led to kind of you and I getting connected after I came back from that one.
Right.
And that's when you and Cam connected on that deployment.
Yeah.
I think that was the one in 08. Is that the one where he was in Sodder for a
yes.
while?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. They had come back from Sodder. When I got there in July-ish.
Okay.
And so they had just gotten back and—
I was so jealous of them too. I was like sitting in like Southeast Asia and I was looking at after actions of unilateral combat operations in Sodder City and Big Cam was there as a JTAC.
just hammering.
I know, dude.
Oh, man. I remember hearing stories about that deployment because I was still in SQT, obviously, because I like literally— So I graduated SQT in like late June. That's crazy. I can't even remember the date. That's so weird. But like
did,
late June. Wait,
did you graduate?
Yeah, maybe I took the online
course. Are you a Navy SEAL?
I took the online course. And so that was, it's a little different. But I graduated, yeah, in like late June. But so when we were in SQT, which is SEAL qualification training for people who don't know what that is. It's like the training you do right before you graduate and get your Trident. And we're at Land Warfare in Nyland. And like hearing these stories of what Team 3 was doing overseas, being like, this is ridiculous, you know, like just hearing all the stories like Chris Kyle and all those guys exactly going into Solder City and doing those overwatches.
Yep. And the difference too, you know, for everybody out there that doesn't realize this, most of the combat ops that we were doing in that time period were partnered. So you were with like an Iraqi partner force or an Afghan partner force, but we were heavily focused on Iraq kind of post Red Wing.
Yeah.
And to the fact that these guys were going out, I mean, they were literally going out with no partner force as a unilateral kind of sole SEAL unit in four, like troop size elements. So it was like 40 guys going in, taking like these massive buildings in Solder City.
Man.
And I mean, and it was a cool mission too, because there was a lot of U.S. being killed in Solder.
Right, exactly. Yeah, that's the mission was like Overwatch positions as they built these places, correct?
Yeah, they were walling off Solder City. So there was a big, so Muqtada al-Sadr was a big Shia cleric that was backed by Iran, and they were killing a lot of U.S. forces within Baghdad. And they controlled, like, I remember seeing the imagery. It's just this big rectangular block that had like a bridge, like bridges going into it. And like the only way you get in and out is like through these like little choke points.
Man.
But they got to go in there to defend people that were constructing the walls around Solder City to like wall it off.
Yeah. So, So I showed up in Iraq, like right after that had happened. They'd all come back to, we were out in like Rawa, way up like out west in all of them.
Good times.
Yeah. Eating these, we were on a Marine base and not eating the best food, not, you know.
Yeah, dude.
The only bathroom was a Johnny on the spot. amazing. So good times. So yeah, that was mine. And then we came back and that's when you became the OIC of Charlie Platoon.
Yep.
And I was in Delta Platoon.
Yep.
With, yeah.
Okay. And we worked up together.
Yeah.
We worked up together with a lot of great guys. And then,
oh man, tons.
And then We both deployed over to Iraq. You were in Fallujah. Mm-hmm. I was in Ramadi. Totally different Iraq compared to what I saw in 06 and even in 08. I mean, it had changed dramatically.
Right.
And I think that deployment, we were like in the process of turning it over to Department of State. So it was like very police type operations. You were serving warrants.
Yeah.
So totally different feel than everything else. Like I'm not going to retell the story. I'd done it on Andy's podcast.
I listened to it. I listened to it. It was good.
But yeah, dude, like totally different. Like I thought I was going to die on my first turnover op, like going out the gates with an East Coast platoon to do a turnover op in like a Hilux pickup truck. No armor. Right. So I thought we were going to like get killed. But different time, much more permissive.
Right.
And I was there for a few months and then I ended up getting pulled to Afghanistan.
That's right. So, but while we were in Iraq, you built a rock, the moon wall.
The most effective climbing wall.
The most effective climbing wall in Ramadi.
Yeah.
And I built one in Fallujah.
Yeah.
With the help.
Slightly less effective.
Nah, it was even more effective, I would say. And I had the help of someone else. I didn't build it myself. But yeah,
I am inept when it comes to carpentry. So I convinced a lot of people better than I to construct the walls.
For me. I had to talk to old Tango Whiskey into getting me. I worked on this dude for a couple of weeks hard. I was like,
was he scratching his eyes?
Oh, definitely scratching his eyeballs.
I love that guy.
I was like, you got to help me build this wall. He's like, I can help you build the wall. And he did. So yeah, that was awesome. So you were the one who kind of, you know, you got me into rock climbing.
Yeah.
I used to literally hang on hang boards and try to do one arm pull-ups, but I couldn't do one arm pull-ups. So I had to use bands and give myself extra, you know, a little bit of offset with the other hand.
You were just heavier.
I was, you know, yeah. I just wasn't as strong. I'll your give upper you body, out. You, your upper body is stronger than mine. I'll
My
give
lower
you that.
Body is significantly weaker than yours.
Right. I'll give you that. Like, I can squat. You can hang. You can do one arm pull ups.
I think I would probably crumble under the weight that you squat. I would probably have a herniated disc.
Nah, I doubt it. This guy says this stuff, but then he also like I've also seen him. I remember him actually on that deployment. You're in Ramadi and you throw like 315 on the bench press and do it for like a set of five or something. And I'm like, oh yeah. He's like, I haven't worked out in like 8+ years. And I'm like, what is happening now?
I was climbing, but yeah. not lifting weights at all. I actually do remember that.
But he like throws 315 on the bench press and just reps it out for five. I'm like, sure, pal.
I will say my stabilizing muscles were a little bit weird. Like it was like, I took it off and I was like shaking. Yes. And I'm like, I don't know if this is a good idea, but let's go for it. And
another phenomenal story that you like, so like to know who Nick is. Nick is, I've heard the story where he got asked to, you know, someone to pace him on a 50-miler run where Nick isn't running, right? Not training to run, correct? And a buddy calls you up, is like, hey, I'm doing a 50-miler tomorrow. Can you pace me on it? And he goes out and does it. And like, what were you holding his paces at?
Well, so I think they were doing a 100-miler, but I paced for 50 of it.
Oh, geez.
But I was definitely wrecked afterwards. I have now.
But who in their right mind would even go do it? Love it. That's what I love about you, Nick. That's what I love about you.
But dude, in my old age now, my brain still tells me that I can go out and do stuff like that.
Right.
But I went out. I have not been running. Actually, I told you when I came over tonight, like I ran for the first time in like 8 months. And I was like really tired. I took a nap this afternoon afterwards. But
Jocko would not be happy with that.
No. Like he'd
be like, you laid there and got weak.
I laid there and I got weak. I could feel the strength just like seeping out of my body.
For sure.
But I agreed to go do I said I was going to go do, and I told a buddy I was going to do a rim to rim to rim at the Grand Canyon last year in October. Yes. I think I committed to it in like August or something. And I'm like, okay, that gives me a couple months to work up. Dude, I did like 18 miles of total training for like the 48-mile crossing. And my brain tells me that I'm capable of doing these things.
Of course.
And I am. I did it. I gutted it out.
Right.
But dude, I was suffering the next day. So like my game plan this go around is to actually do some distance on a consistent basis before I go out and run 50 or 60 miles again.
I guess that's okay. I guess we'll say that's okay.
I know.
It's very weak, but I'll allow it.
Just to come off the couch and just go get after it.
I got this. hold my beer, right?
Well, dude, I was talking about this today, man. Like I think I enjoy kind of the suffering component of it. Like if I was in like, now, granted, like it would be nice to be in like good enough, like put in the distance, put in the miles, so like you're not completely destroyed afterwards.
Right.
But there's something about doing something that's really challenging that puts you into kind of this unique state of mind.
Right.
Where you gotta gut it out. You gotta suffer through it.
Oh, for sure.
And like I was not prepared to do that rim to rim to rim at all.
I mean, it sounds like you were, obviously.
Yeah, I mean
mentally you were there.
Mentally I was there. Physically, not so much. But it was good, man. I mean, like I do remember like the last, you know, I could feel something was wrong, right? Like I had like tendonitis flared up in my knee 10 miles. Like I think like the descent into the canyons, like, you know, 6 to 10 miles or whatever it is down there. And like I got to the bottom and I'm with one of my buddies and I'm like, damn, my knees, I feel something a little weird. Something's a little off. Like you know, we know our bodies well.
Right. Yeah.
And I'm like, you know, it's all right, dude. Let's just keep on pushing. You know, it's like put a point of no return. If you go across the canyon, you have to turn around and come back. Or I would have had to call my wife and told her to drive like 3.5 hours around the canyon to pick me up on the north rim. And to drive me back.
And obviously that's not going to happen.
No, my pride wouldn't let me do that.
Never.
So I remember getting to, suffering a bit on the ascent. And thankfully there were some trekking poles that my friend had that I was able to use, which was great to change my stride. Mm. But I got to the top and I'm like, okay, I have enough ibuprofen to dose myself with 200 to 400 milligrams every hour on the hour for the entire return leg to get me through it. So I think I consumed like thousands of milligrams of ibuprofen, but I got through it. And like, it was a total gut check, dude.
Total, like total mental gut check. I love it. I do the, I agree with you completely, though, on that aspect where, don't get me wrong, there's a very smart and calculated way to do these things that we're talking about.
To not get injured.
Yeah, to not get injured, correct. But there's something about, I agree with you completely. There's something about testing yourself mentally, like, and just being like, I want to just, I think I can do this.
Yeah.
And my body's going to suffer because it's not ready for it. So my mind is going to have to carry me through it.
Yeah.
And I've always said I've wanted to do an Ironman without training for it. And just like literally, and not like go into a competition. Mm-hmm. I literally just want to go do the distances, back to back to back, like, yep. You know, like plan out a little route and do it here. And, you know, like for my own sake, not like for anything else, but just for me just to go do it.
Yeah.
So I think that would be fun. And speaking of what you just talked about too, the same thing where, so I got called by a buddy, Brian Chantosh, uh-huh. Right?
And so you told me right before you read.
I called you the day before.
And you're like, yeah, I'm going to do this thing. I'm like, what thing are you doing? Right. And you explained it to me. And I'm like, are you prepared for this?
Right.
Aren't the other guys ultra runners that are like competing in this thing?
Dude, yeah, you got like these very like ultra endurance competitive athletes doing this thing. And it was for an awesome cause, right?
Yeah.
And I told Brian from the get-go, I was like, listen, man, like, I'm going to come out and support this because I love the cause. I don't know like what I'm going to be capable of doing. Like I'm literally, you know, 18 months out of a pretty extensive knee surgery.
Yeah.
And like the last, and really why I got the knee surgery is because I haven't been able to run. And so I wanted to be able to run. And so I got I'm getting this and I'm like, so you're going to do 2.5 miles on the hour. And either on a true form treadmill or on a trail in Boulder, Colorado. And I'm like, and then for extra credit, if, you know, because it just being a good runner doesn't make you tough. Let's throw in some bodyweight bench press to, you know.
Why not?
To basically, after you're done with your run, you can accumulate as much as you want. And 50 bench press will equal 1 hour of running, right? So there's a winner. And it was last man standing, right? So it was everyone at some point. The cool part about it was I thought that at some point, everyone's going to have to come to terms with themselves and be like, I quit. I don't want to do this anymore.
Yeah.
And I think that was the whole point of why he did it. It was really cool. It was for his foundation called Big Fish Foundation, where they're helping out veterans and stuff and people with mental –
yep.
Just like mental health issues and like showing people that everyone struggles, right? And so I really liked the concept of it, what they did.
It was awesome.
But me going into it, I was like, it was after I talked to you, I actually remember getting a little more nervous because of how you were like, yeah, I think you should be able to like go to this and this. And like you actually like started having like calculated thoughts. And I'm like literally like, I have had no thought process on this whatsoever. I went and did. I think I did.
I was rationalizing for you, Josh. Yes, that was what I was doing. I was trying. I was like, how do I make him feel better about this? Because he's probably really concerned right now. So
you were breaking it down. I'm like, man, I haven't even thought about that at all. Literally, like, I was already going into like zombie mind mode where like from hour one, I'm just not even going to think about like, I'm just going to do an hour at a time and that's it, you know?
What I found out though is that you can do that, but at some point your joints stop working.
The joints flow.
And you can't move your knees anymore.
No. Right. All I had done up to that point, and I think I had like two, I could have had 2 months of training really. But I was like, listen, like I tried to go out and run like 3 miles one day on the road and my knee was like wrecked for like 5 days. Dude. So I was like, I called up Brian, I was like, listen, man, I'm gonna come. But man, like I don't know how this is gonna go. And I was actually pretty stoked. I got through 12 hours.
Which is awesome.
Which equaled, I want to say like 30, it was like 32 or 34 miles. I can't remember, something like that.
Which
right?
To put on your legs cold is actually a big deal.
Yeah, exactly. In 12 hours, I did 30 something miles, which I was pretty pumped about. And I never actually ran that many miles in a day before. But I also did 550 bodyweight bench press.
I thought that was your strategy. I was like, you were just going to do more bench press.
I think when I quit, I was like 250 reps ahead of the next highest person with reps. And so I was like, okay.
Like, good.
I don't think this is going to go very far.
You just got to hope somebody quits within the time frame that's allotted to you because of your bench press.
So I basically got like 10 extra or 11 extra hours of running. But But yeah, no, it was such a cool event. And like, I think the winner went like 62 hours.
Yeah. There's some incredible people, man. I've seen, like, especially during like this whole lockdown period, like they've done a bunch of kind of virtual ultras where people just go for time.
Right.
Like how, you know, okay, who can run the longest without quitting? Right.
Yeah.
And it's like in the 60 plus hour range, which is awesome. And then, dude, it gets you like, that's what gets me fired up about that stuff. It's like, it's not, I mean, everybody, you like to go fast. Like, right. I mean, growing up and like before I went to Buds, like I was like way into kind of like ultra running and adventure racing. But I wasn't, I mean, I liked going fast and being competitive.
Right.
But what I liked more is like the suck factor, like the sleep deprivation was really interesting to me. And then just gutting it out, man.
Yeah.
So like right now it's like, I'm at this point where it doesn't take all that much physical exertion in like an event like that to get me into gut check mode because like I have so much swelling in my tendons and stuff in my knees because I haven't put the distance in.
Right.
But it's actually, that's what I always loved about stuff. And so an event like that is perfect for it. It's like,
Yeah,
it's going to get you there regardless. You're not going to like cruise through the event, right? There's not a known end in sight. And I think that's the unique aspect of that thing.
It was really cool. And it was cool to watch. There was, how many was there of us? There was eight of us, I believe. And man, like everyone, you could see them. They'd go up. Like for me, I got to watch it from the distance, right? Because I, at 12 hours, my knee was gone. Like it was the size of a cantaloupe. And at that point, literally every step felt like someone was like taking daggers in. I'd reached my limit on how much ibuprofen and Motrin I was able to take. And it was at that point, like literally it wasn't even doing anything.
You can always take more.
You could always take more. Exactly.
No, that's a false statement. Don't endorse that at all.
Right. So at that point I was like, okay, nothing's doing anything. Like no relief is getting it. I'm going to do permanent damage to my knee.
For sure.
And so I was like, okay, I'm going to go ahead and pull out as much as my ego didn't want me to. And I was like, to be honest, the rest of my body felt great. Yeah. I mean, I was only 12 hours in, right? I mean, these guys were going 60 hours. And so I was hoping to make it full, at least through a full day, but whatever. But what was cool to watch is exactly like some of these people who like had never done anything like this before and like their highs and their lows and like they like, you know, and then you'd see them get past their low and they'd come back up high and they'd be like crushing it for a couple hours and then boom, it's they fall off and they're like barely making the time frame on their runs and stuff.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, like there's like you're like, oh, they're not gonna make it another, you know, like this is their last hour probably. They might try to make it another hour. And then the next hour they like crush it. It was awesome to watch. And it was just such a cool thing, right? To watch people, you know, get through these low mental states, right? Because I mean, so many of us as veterans, and you know, I'm just kind of leading into like what you're really big into right now, right? Like you are helping a lot of veterans out and you have so much information and so much knowledge on some new, I guess, techniques that they're using for people for like these mental things. And it's such a cool thing to hear about. And it's something that I love and, you know, hope to support. And I try to support in all my, you know, whatever, everything else that I'm doing right now, like give back. And so, but tell people like, I guess go into whatever you want to go into with all this.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting, man. I mean, like I've already talked a lot on kind of other platforms about, you know, my personal experience. You know, I transitioned out of the SEAL teams after 10 and a half years and I was good to go, man. I mean, as far as I was concerned, I mean, I had dealt with my own personal trauma, you know, not just losing, you know, buddies overseas, but, you know, I had lost, you know, my dad, at a relatively young age, like right before I started my first workup, I lost my dad. My dad was an important person in my life. But then in 2012, I had my younger brother. I have two younger brothers, but my middle brother that was closest in age to me was killed in an inbounds avalanche in Winter Park, Colorado.
Wow.
So total gut check. And, you know, I had an opportunity to spend time with him and his, you know, he had two young kids at that point, you know, and his son was only like 8 weeks old. Man. So it was a huge gut check for me. So, I mean, I experienced that trauma and that was kind of my catalyst out of the teams. Mm-hmm. But all in all, I mean, I felt pretty good, man.
Right.
You know, I think we do as SEALs and, you know, as combat veterans for the most part, I mean, I think we're really good at compartmentalizing our emotions and our trauma. And I look at that as kind of like a superpower that we have. I mean, I think that's why we're so effective at our job, is like the guys that sign up to do this type of work are just really good at compartmentalizing things. Right. And I think it starts at an early age. Like, you know, I had a great conversation today with a friend talking about how, you know, a lot of his buddies from the teams had like some pretty gnarly childhoods, man, where like they had to like deal with a lot of shit, but they persevered and they got through it, and right. they got really good at like compartmentalizing it, locking it away, and like moving on and continuing mission, right? Yeah. And it got them through. I mean, it added to kind of mental fortitude going right. through buds, going into combat, being super effective on target, training and doing that over and over again.
Yeah.
But what I've found is that at a certain point, that little box doesn't have a top on it, that you've been locking all this stuff away. You've just been basically throwing it, this little box is in the back of your psyche, and you've been throwing all your baggage in there. Mm. And there's no lid to keep it locked, right? Or if the lid is like, it's like just kind of closed, yeah. but it's not locked, it's not latched down. Right. And in time, it fills up and it starts to spill over. And I love that kind of analogy because it's so true. Like I was good to go. Or at least I thought I was. Mm. And I think my box was starting to get full, but it hadn't spilled over when I left the military. And, you know, I noticed kind of further, I took on a bunch of stress. I mean, it's not like we walk away from kind of a desire to perform and put stress on ourselves and, right. and you know, continue to compete. it's just not in our DNA.
Yeah.
So, you know, I got out and, you know, I started hammering in a new career. And trying to prove myself and reinvent myself and, you know, just prove to people that like I can succeed at whatever I do.
Right.
And I think it was the straw that broke the camel's back. I mean, after probably 4 or 5 years, I started noticing some things about myself that were different. And I think that's the point where, you know, my box started to overflow.
Yeah.
And it started to kind of trickle down over the sides. And I, you know, I look at myself as very fortunate because I recognized it. You know, I had enough perspective to be able to realize that, you know, I'm not myself. You know, I was angry, much more angry than I typically would be because I'm a pretty level-headed person.
I don't know about that. if you've ever met Nick, you would never think this dude was angry. Like, he was an officer in the teams, right? And he like, I remember this, the only time I ever remember you even, sorry to interrupt on the story.
No, dude,
but like the only time I ever remember you even yelling, I remember us being at like San Clemente Island and you got fired up because I think we just didn't perform well on one of our training missions.
I don't even remember.
And you were like standing on top of the Humvee and you're like fired up and like you weren't even really, it was kind of laughable because it was like, it was so not you, right? It was like, it wasn't how Nick led.
People like, were like, give him a hug.
That guy's really mad right now. And you were just like, you do all these workouts, and this is where you got to put it in. I remember, like, you were like, Nick was
that's
a guy.
Awesome, man.
Yeah, it wasn't you, but it was I could tell how like fired up you were because of you were actually yelling. Where I'm like, dude, like I've never even heard Nick. I don't think I've ever heard his unless we're sitting there joking around. Like I've never heard your voice level change over like a certain thing. It just wasn't you, and it was just so
it
yeah.
It isn't me, man.
That was like that's funny that I can actually remember the one time, you know, you yell probably.
Well, dude, I mean, like, and that's right. I was at least cognizant of that, and I'm like, I was just getting really short, you know, short with friends, short with people that I was working with, excusing myself from meetings because I was just like wanted to like, you know, reach across the table and like hit the person, you know, and that's not me. Like I'm more calm and cool and collected than that. And I, you know, feeling apathetic about stuff, you know, I've always enjoyed physical activity. And like, right. I was just like, I was like forcing myself to go and work out,
right.
you know, I just do it, but I just things that I typically love doing, I didn't love doing anymore. And I went down kind of the rabbit hole of finding a solution. So like I got blood work done to figure out, I mean, there's a lot of guys that have endocrine issues from concussive injury. And, you know, I got my blood work done and that turned out it was like, okay, I didn't need help there. And, you know, the docs were like, well, you're having like a clinical depressive episode. And I'm like, dude, I'm not, I'm not sitting in the corner crying. Like I'm just, yeah. I'm not like, and, but it's what I've learned is that it's just like an overarching descriptor for, you know, all these symptoms,
right.
Not necessarily sitting and kind of fitting the prototypical depressive mindset.
Yeah.
And you know, and I found some, you know, alternative treatments instead mm-hmm. of going on to antidepressants because yeah. I really wanted to dig to the root cause of the issue. You know, I've had too many friends that were quickly prescribed antidepressants. And I'm not saying that that's, you know, those are terrible. You know, everybody, I mean, if you need them, you need them. Mm. But, you know, my viewpoint on them is that they're a Band-Aid. They're not a solution. You're not digging into kind of the root cause. And, you know, and I felt strong enough to be able to just persevere and say, okay, I'm gonna figure out some other ways around this. And I'm going to dig deeper and try to figure out a way to solve the issue. Right. And hopefully, you know, solve it permanently, right? Rather than yeah. just, you know, bandage it. So, you know, I had my own personal struggles and, you know, something that I found to be, you know, probably like the most healing component of this and kind of in this search was, you know, seeing other team guys, like reconnecting with other team guys
yeah.
that had similar struggles, opening up,
right.
being okay with vulnerability. So, being okay to tell my story, admit, you know, that I'm struggling,
right?
And looking for help. And in doing that, I would typically get, you know, reciprocal vulnerability. And, you know, in this pursuit, you know, I went out and I had gone through a couple batteries of TMS, which I talked a bit about on Tim Ferriss's podcast. It's transcranial magnetic stimulation, which is just, you know, they've used it to like magnetic pulses to stimulate brain activity to help people with depression. Mm. I went through that, but you know, like in going through that, I ran into a bunch of team guys,
right?
You know, in the waiting room, and they're like, "Hey, what are you doing here? what are you doing?" Well, there's only one reason to be here. We're going right. in to go see the doc that's going to zap our brain with a magnetic like beam or whatever. So it's like you couldn't really hide it. So it right. kind of was like forced vulnerability.
Yeah,
but it was the best thing that ever happened to me, man. I mean, as far as kind of giving me the gift of vulnerability, because maybe I wouldn't. I probably would have been like everybody else, just trying to gut it out, not tell anybody about it, pretend like I'm good to go and I have to put on this like this bravado.
Yeah, I mean, that's just the team guy way, right?
For sure, man.
It's not even the team guy way. It's the man way, right? Yep. Like, and you know, it's what's bred into us from a very early age, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that like, hey, to be a man, you don't cry, you're tough, you know, like man up, right?
Yeah, what do we say?
And there are some good. There are some things there that, yeah, that's true. You do need to man up in certain times. But like being vulnerable is a huge thing. And, you know, like, I'm trying to teach my kids that too, you know, like, mm-hmm. like because I'll lose my cool with them and I'll be like, man, that was, and they're the quickest ones to call you. And I'm like, Dad, why are you so mad?
Right,
you're
like, right.
You're right. This isn't really that big of a deal, you yeah. know? And like, and even being man enough for me to like to apologize to him in that yeah. moment, you know, and be like, and show him that like, hey, I'm your dad, but I'm not always right.
Yeah.
And you could even catch me on it. And so yeah. like, but yeah, sorry.
Well, it's no, dude. Yeah. I mean, it's so true, man. It's like a big first step. I mean, the only first step for anybody that's struggling, I don't care if you're foreign military, you're you know, in the corporate world. You know, it doesn't make a difference.
Right.
The first step is focusing on you. You know, you need to make things right with yourself. You can't worry about everybody else. You have to focus on you. You have to go internal. You have to be willing to be vulnerable and willing to open up to other people is like one of the best paths to healing. It's the only path to healing.
Right.
And so I found that vulnerability kind of in that search for something as an alternative to kind of conventional treatment. For what I was dealing with. And, you know, since then I've expanded on that. You know, I point to, connection now, more than anything else as kind of the thing that I lost that we lose when we leave the SEAL teams.
Yeah.
There's a huge loss of connection and I used to say it was purpose and yeah, there's some kind of loss of purpose, but you know, the more I thought about it is like, you know what? I mean, I had purpose in the teams. It was to be a good brother, you know, a good operator and have people's back. But, you know, I still had purpose when I left. You know, my purpose was my family. I want to make sure I took care of them. I still wanted to be a good friend. I wanted to be a good, you know, teammate to those guys that I did serve with.
Right.
But I lost connection, man. Yeah. And I think it's that loss of connection is really something for me that accelerated kind of my kind of spiral downward into kind of getting to a low point in my life.
Yeah.
It's because I removed myself from, you know, connection with a lot of guys. And it wasn't because I was trying to be, like, I didn't like everybody.
Right.
Like, I love everybody.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't say it that way before, yeah. But like, I was trying so hard to kind of prove that I could be something outside of a Navy SEAL. And I removed myself from kind of that community and that connection.
Yeah.
And by removing that connection from my life, like, dude, it hurt me. And, yeah. So like my, you know, my path back over the last several years has been kind of that introduction to vulnerability and being okay with it, right? Being non-judgmental of myself first and foremost, man, has allowed me to be non-judgmental, or at least trying very hard to be non-judgmental of everybody around me.
Right.
And then realizing that connection is vitally important.
It is. It's so huge. I agree completely. Like, I mean, exactly. Like, when I left the teams, you lose that connection. Even when I went to trade debt, mm-hmm. you know, like, it's which trade debt is training to, when I became an instructor, right? Mm-hmm. Like, in the teams, you do, like, when wherever you're at, right, you're with your boys, you're with your group, and it's you don't, and it's crazy because you could be on the same coast with the SEAL teams and not see some of your closest buddies because they're just in a different platoon,
yeah.
or a different troop than you, right? And so even when going to trade, I remember like having that, but I have my buddies that, you know, and I became really close even with the other instructors, right? And I still actually keep in contact. Those actually, they might be some of the only team guys I still keep in contact with, you know? It's like the training, the guys at the end, right? Yeah. And so,
it was like your last touch point with the team.
Yeah, right. Last touch point. And you know,
and I had a similar experience too, man. Like, my last touch point was at SQT.
Right.
And I stayed connected to a handful of guys that were cadre with me. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But dude, I lost. I mean, case in point, man. Like, you and I, like, right. We lost touch for a while.
Dude, yeah, we. I mean, like, we were close, dude.
We went to Waco Tanks climbing together. We hung out all the time.
Yeah, man.
We went to dinner parties at Big Gam's house.
Exactly, I mean, right.
But dude, we lost connection, and our relationship was no different than all kinds of relationships I had.
Right.
I mean, I've reconnected with more friends from the SEAL community and SEALs that I didn't even know while I was on active duty service.
Right.
Because I've been willing to be vulnerable,
yeah.
not judge myself, not be worried about what other people think of me because, I don't care. Like, non-judgment is like a big core principle in my life.
Yeah.
And it's opened me up to kind of all these great relationships with guys, you know, from the community. And dude, it's like we've started hanging out more.
Yeah.
You know,
it's been great. It has been.
Every person that I've reconnected with, dude, it's like it's been like a beacon of light in my life.
Yeah.
And it's just galvanized kind of this, you know, healing process for me.
Yeah.
And dude, I feel personally like I haven't just like healed and gotten back to the kind of the place I was. Like, dude, I'm like accelerating past it. I mean, that's the way I look at it is like, you know, this work, this like, you know, work on myself has been, you know, a launch point for me to be a better version of myself, for my kids, for my wife, for my friends.
For sure.
So yeah, dude, I found a lot of good out of it.
Yeah, no, it's been huge. It's been huge for me even since we've connected back, right? Like you're probably one of the guys that I lost touch with that I missed the most, right? There was like, there, you know, I miss a lot of guys, right? That I'm not in contact with, but man, like, you know, what's so funny is how many times, like, you're one of the stories that I always talk about when like people ask me about like team guy stories. And I'm like, it's funny that you're you know, one of the names that always comes up.
Well, dude, so, it's the feeling's mutual, man, because I have the utmost level of respect for you and admiration for your capabilities.
No, yeah.
And dude, you're a stellar athlete. And like, you know, to hear the stuff that you say about me, like I blush. Like, I'm like, oh man, I feel embarrassed. But dude, it means a lot, man. And
now,
it's gratitude too, dude. Like, I love like being able to hear that from somebody that you respect. It makes me a better person.
Right.
And I mean, when I'm able to do that, for somebody else.
It's been huge. Like it really has been. Like, exactly. Just that being connected in some way, right? Like, I think that so many people struggle because they do what you said earlier, where they like, you know, they hide from everyone. They, mm-hmm. they like, you know, they go into this seclusion where they're not around people. And this whole pandemic is not helping anybody, right? It's only hurting, but as long as you can still stay connected in some way, it's such a huge aspect of who we are as human beings. Mm-hmm. I believe, you know, like, you know, this, like what you're just saying, it's been huge, and it's cool to hear. And yeah,
we thrive off of it, man.
Right.
You know, we're meant to be connected with each other. We're meant to talk to each other.
Yeah.
We're not meant to kind of lock ourselves away and be secluded from personal kind of interpersonal connection.
The brain is a freaking powerful thing. It can work against you just as much as it can work for you.
Well, dude, it's like, I mean, we started the conversation talking about kind of like that grit, that mental, the mental component to these like hard things, these hard experiences.
Yeah.
Dude, I have recently, you know, I've gotten into meditation over the last year and a half.
Right.
And I am blown away with the impact that, you know, this training that I have been kind of blowing off for all of my life until a year and a half ago.
Right.
The impact that it's had, positive impact, not just from like an emotional standpoint or a spiritual standpoint, from a physical standpoint, my ability to kind of optimize my brain.
Yeah.
And seeing the results that it's had in kind of just my physical endeavors. Like I've noticed a difference. Like, I sit every morning now, like clockwork. I will not miss a day of meditation. There's days where I get interrupted. Like if I'm sitting for an hour, I'll get 35 minutes in and like I'll have my 8-year-old or my 4-year-old run into the room, turn the lights on and like jump on me, but I'll knock it out. I'll knock out the rest of it because it's important, dude.
Yeah.
It's as important to me as going out and training physically.
Oh, for sure. 100%. Like, you know, like, and how was it starting out? Like,
hard,
like even hearing the word you saying I meditated for an hour gives me anxiety. It gives me like anxiety, right? Like I'm like, I couldn't sit for an hour. But yeah. I do a very little bit of meditation. I definitely want to do more. I know I should do more.
Yeah.
Turning my brain off and like just trying not to
think hard, dude,
is one of the hardest things you can do.
Yeah.
It's crazy. And for me, I started doing it with the cold tub stuff. You know, I started doing it with the wind, like it's a Wim Hof, whatever type strategy. But I kind of integrated it with myself with exactly like that became my meditation where I could turn my brain off because in the cold water,
you needed a distraction.
I needed a distraction. And the distraction was me shutting my brain off, right? And counting my breaths.
Yep.
And that became my meditation. And when I do it regularly, I'm like, sometimes I get weak and I don't want to go out there. And I'll get weak in the mind and I'll be like, yeah, I'll be all right. Yeah.
That's a pretty intense distraction to get turn your thoughts off in your brain for meditation.
But to be honest, right? So your body temperature is warmest in the morning, and sometimes I'll do it later in the day. But when I typically do it, I literally roll out of bed, I make my bed, and then I walk straight out to that cold tub.
Yeah,
and I lift it up. And to be honest, when you get in the morning, because your body temperature is hottest in the morning, I actually feel like it's easier. Uh-huh. If I do it at nighttime before I go to bed, like so I start shivering so much faster.
You put your toe in, you're like, oh.
I know, I get right in because there's only one way to get into an ice tub, and everyone knows that you just get right in.
You just get right in.
You're not it's testing so true, the water, dude, right? You just get right in.
Get in, go underwater.
Right. And you get it out of the way, right? And it's not as bad as you think. But when I do it in the morning and I do my like, you know, I typically sit in there for about 4 minutes-ish and do my deep breaths. And I, you know, when I get out, man, it's like, and I know it's not just the cold water, but I know it was the breathing and like me shutting my brain off and getting, you know, allowing myself to reset that, you know, instead of looking at Instagram or, you know, turning the TV on or pulling up the stock market or pulling up emails, you know, it's like, it's just such a great way to like, start the day,
you know,
and when I do it, man, I feel so much better.
Yeah. Everybody can get there too. Right. It's like our egoic mind craves distraction. It wants to throw you off course more than anything in the world.
Yeah.
It wants you to search Instagram. It wants you to jump on the news. It wants you to jump on Facebook,
right.
Like turn on the TV. like it absolutely wants to throw you off.
Yeah.
And like I look at it now as like it's a challenge. Like I feel like my ego is bowing up to me when I'm meditating right. and like it and I'm getting bored. Or I feel like
what a phenomenal way to think about that. I've never thought of it. Dude, that is a genius way to
that is
because
the way.
Exactly like us as competitors, as men, like yeah. I'm not gonna let this beat me. Like that, why you it know is, why I get dude, you know why I get in the cold water? Yeah. Because I hated the cold yeah. water more yeah. than anything yeah. in buds.
There's my that's and my like, that's like, my trick for meditation.
Right. What a genius way right there.
Because I was gonna say, dude, like, dude. You are a mentally tough person, right? You have a lot of grit. You've endured a lot of like physical punishment. You've proven yourself from a physical standpoint. Yeah. I mean, you're talking about jumping into an ice bath and like the average right. person, it's like, man, right. that's beyond me.
Right.
Yet you were like, I'm struggling meditating for 5 minutes to kind of right. turn my brain off.
It's true.
But it's very difficult, man, yeah. because we don't look at it like a challenge, right. like something we need to focus on or yeah. we need to get better at.
Right.
It's like, like our brains, the overwhelming majority of society, our little brains are all atrophied and shriveled and not worked out and weak.
Yeah.
And dude, meditation is physical. It's training for your brain.
Right.
And I do look at it now when I sit, you know, I make a conscious decision to not move. So I stay very still. And I stay disciplined in that stillness because it's the only way that I go deeper. And it's the only way that I can start to shut down kind of my monkey brain that's trying to tell me to stop. Man. And,
yeah.
And I, when I sit, and this is the crazy thing too, as I've gotten deeper and deeper into meditation, like I notice things some days like where like I'll get this itch on my cheek or like a feels like a cramp in like my back or my ribs. And I'm sitting there like cross-legged on like on my mattress. And I'm like, that's my ego trying to throw me off my game. Like it wants me to move. It wants me to move my hand and scratch my face. Guess what? There is nothing on my face. There's no reason why my face is itching yeah. right now. Nothing's different. Yeah. It's my brain making my face feel like I need to scratch it. So I'm going to move and it's going to throw me off my game and it's going to take me out of the mindset that I need to be in to effectively get through that sit.
Yeah.
And I look at it, I mean, it's a challenge. And it's, dude, it's like, I'm a human being, man. I struggle with it, but
right.
I have looked at it more and more as a challenge to stay still, stay disciplined in that practice.
Yeah.
And then do it every day. And, you know, the ultimate goal is to, you know, gain more control over this part of my body that is probably the most prolific and most powerful thing that we have to access yeah. as human beings. And we, none of us actually access a fraction of the capability that our brain, you know, is there to provide for yeah. us.
I love it, man. I love that, like that you put it that way, right? Because it's such a great way for people who think, oh, meditation's, you know, it's stupid. It's what, it's, you know, it's for kooks or, you know, yeah. like that's, you know, cause it, and then you think of it that way and you're like, you're right. Right. Because I know I should be doing it.
Yeah.
You know, I know that it's healthy for me. I know that it's like going to make me better.
Well, it's
going to
make you a more elite athlete. It's right. going to make you better at the things right. that you typically measure yourself against.
Yeah.
Right. If like, if I told you, I'm like, hey, if you do this, you do this physical training regimen, you're going to be 15% stronger right. or faster or have that much more endurance, you would absolutely be like,
done.
Give it to me. I'm going to do it.
Done. I'm going to do it twice.
Yeah.
No, I'm going to do it once. I'm going to do it twice.
Yeah.
And I'm going to double it up.
And I believe it's like, and I think, I mean, science, I mean, granted, I am not a neuroscientist, but there's a lot of research out there and there's books and there's podcasts right. with some brilliant individuals that are looking at meditation and saying, hey, this stuff is legitimate.
Yeah.
You know, there's guys whose sole profession is to help, you know, elite level athletes, you know, Olympians, MMA athletes, you know, mm-hmm. like hone the edge of their mental game yeah. with meditation to be a better, you know, a more optimal version of themselves.
Yeah.
Because the mental game is like, especially when you get into kind of elite athletics,
right.
you know, the difference between, you know, a winner and a loser in that category is the mental edge.
Right, exactly. The winner between first and second place, when you get to those levels, it's fractions of percentages.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're talking about exactly, if I can gain a fraction of a percent, by doing meditation?
Yeah.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Like, you mean not hurting my body, you know, like not stressing it more, actually like relaxing it and resetting it, like resetting my central nervous system, you know, resetting probably a lot of things from that. Yeah, it's huge.
Yeah.
Exactly. And if you think of it that way, where it's like, now this is just another competitive edge. Like this is something that can be competitive for me. Like where, oh, I can do this. I can get another 10 minutes. I can do another 10 minutes of meditation. I can do this.
I'm going to do it. Well, dude, I started with 5 minutes, man. Like anybody else, I started with guided meditation.
Yeah.
And there's a bunch of great apps out there, you know, and it's really kind of, you have to pick your, you need to pick your application based on what works for you. Because, you know, I use Waking Up, but you know, my sister-in-law has found Calm to be effective. I just got a
supplement.
No, I use Calm as well. Calm is another meditation app. Headspace.
Oh yeah, 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 right. Yeah, okay.
I got turned on to Insight Timer recently, which is actually awesome because I kind of left the guided meditation app and I've just been doing it on my own and kind of, you know, building my, you know, the time that I'm sitting and when I'm sitting. But Insight Timer is awesome because I think it's like a free app unless you want to upgrade.
Oh, yeah.
And it's a great, it has a great timer. There's a lot of good like music or guided meditation.
Right.
But you do that. Yeah, I had to build it up myself. Like I didn't just like, it's not like I go out, like if you're going to go run a marathon or an ultra or something like that, you don't just like go out and run 40 miles.
Well, or maybe, you do. Maybe you do.
So my recommendation is that everybody should start with an hour
with
plus
a
60-minute
meditation. You know, the first time I did the float tank, I did an hour and a half. And oh my gosh, man. Like I got out of there and I was really, really like relaxed and I was in this like daze for a little bit, you know, and it felt amazing. And I remember just being like, I had zero expectations going into it. I was like, this is going to be stupid. I'm going to lay in this blacked out hot tub that's not even really hot. It's just it's like the same temperature as your body. Right?
I always wanted them to make it hotter. I tried to convince the guy earlier. Yeah. I'm like, can you turn it up? Like,
crank it up a little bit. Yeah. And then, I'm going to get salt water in my eye and it's just going to be stupid. But man, I got in that thing and it was unreal how like relaxed and calm. And it was definitely complete sensory deprivation.
Mm-hmm.
Like I literally felt like I was floating in space. And I actually fell asleep, which like I don't take naps. I don't like fall asleep during the day. I don't fall asleep doing that stuff. An hour and a half was definitely way too long to start out with for the first time. I was like, this is way too at an hour I kind of like came to and then basically for the last 30 minutes I just kind of like was thinking way
too. You were waiting for it to be over.
I was just like, please, lights
come on.
You're
waiting for the.
Yeah, right, exactly. And I couldn't wait for it to be over. But I remember how amazing it felt. And I was like, man, this is actually legit. And, it was a form of meditation for sure that I've never really, I haven't been able to like do as much as often as I would like to. You know, you have to go to the place or whatever. Like, Getting a float spa wouldn't be a bad
investment. It'd be a good thing.
It wouldn't be a bad investment, right? So, yeah. But yeah, that shutting your brain off for an hour is a super intense like thing to think about, right?
Yeah.
While you're there. It's exactly because, all your brain wants to do is have another distraction.
Dude, it's built to have distraction. I mean, we've been distracted since we were like, pretty young kids. I mean, I think as a child, like you're kind of like free of that. You haven't really built your ego. And I may be off on the science behind this, but I kind of look at kids as like they haven't developed this ego yet. They don't have a strong sense of ego.
Right.
But through experiences, through trauma and all of that, we build up this internal voice.
Yeah.
You know, let's say like telling us what we can and can't do, trying to like get us to go do things, trying to take us off of our game.
Yep.
And, I want to be in control of that.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, like I want to be in control of my life. Like
for sure.
I want to live in the present as much as I possibly can. I don't want to be living in the past. I don't want to be living in the future. There's no point.
Mm.
Like I want to control my life. I want to live right now. And meditation has been kind of the tool that I'm using to access that.
Yeah.
And it's made me a happier person, man. I mean, I'm a I'm a better version of myself. You know, my wife will tell you, like, I'm a way better version of myself to be around. I enjoy being around my kids. Like, I enjoy hanging out with them.
Right.
You know, I enjoy conversations. You know, I enjoy actually getting together and just being in the moment and not being distracted and kind of looking at my phone and checking Instagram and all the other stuff. Like, dude, it's just, there's so much value and so much happiness that you can tap into if you can just live in the moment.
It's true. My favorite parts of my day are the times of the day when I don't get to have my phone.
Mm-hmm.
It's like 100%. They're like, it's when I'm like in the middle of a workout, if like, you know, like, being exactly like putting my phone away so I can be with my kids and do whatever it is we're doing, you know, and like, just like those times are the best. They're the best times for sure.
And those are the times you'll remember those times.
Yeah, exactly. Right. I won't remember the time I was sitting, you know, looking at Instagram for 15 minutes when I'm, you know, like down the road and be like, man, I wish I would have sat and looked at Instagram more.
Yeah. Before you die, like as you're on your deathbed, you're not going to be like, man, I wish I had more screen time.
I wish I would have liked more pictures on Instagram.
Nobody ever.
yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
well,
man.
Awesome, man. Well, dude, what else? So what are you doing now? What is your business?
So my business is a company called Protect with a K.
Yeah.
So it's a wellness company. Yeah, I know that's used a lot. But, you know, for me, I wanted to develop a company that really gave people, you know, promoted people or promoted the tools to live a more effective life. I mean, the things that we've just been talking about are so important to me. You know, I wanted to share, you know, a mindset and routines that people could use to kind of live that type of a life.
Yeah.
And we've our mantra is kind of live from exposure and kind of, simple products, simple routines, real results. And we've stuck to kind of the basics of supplements, things that like I personally use on a daily basis, and not, you know, kind of your typical supplements. Like, we're not looking at, kind of a full line of like performance supplements and like recovery shakes and creatine and all the other stuff.
Right.
We've launched initially with lion's mane mushroom, which a lot of people don't even know about, but, I've been taking lion's mane for a year and a half because there is some research out there that shows that like lion's mane mushroom, when taken on a regular basis, can actually promote neuroconnectivity, cognitive function, because it helps regrow. It's called myelin, which actually is like the insulating sheath around your nerves, your neurons. So as you age, myelin deteriorates and you lose that connectivity. It's like having a wire that's
not mine, but everyone else's.
Everybody else's. Everybody besides you. But that's the reason we start to forget things. That's the reason we're not as coordinated. That's the reason why it takes longer to pick up new skills. It's because when you're young, you have, you know, every wire is wrapped in that insulation.
Yeah.
So I take lion's mane every single day. You know, I take, you know, gram and a half of lion's mane. So I'm like, that's something I believe in.
Yeah.
So we wanted to launch a solid lion's mane complex.
That's awesome.
So we brought that to market. We also have a B12 D3 K2 tincture, which, you know, everybody is vitamin D. Most people are vitamin D deficient and B12 deficient.
Yeah.
And those things are like kind of, you know, the foundational vitamins that if you had to choose anything to take, you know, you're only going to take a couple different things, like take B12 and D3, you know, it's going to help you sleep better. Eventually it's going to help with kind of, central nervous system function, circulatory, immune system function.
Right.
So
vitamin D is huge. I mean, it's, and that's actually one of the big things you're talking about with COVID right now is the fact that what they're finding is 80% of people who are dying of COVID are like
vitamin D deficient.
And like 98% of those people are like highly
vitamin D deficient,
something like that. It's something crazy. Yeah. I don't know the exact percentages but.
Well, we start by, something that's been important to me is like, you know, spending time in nature, in a nature-based environment. Like, I love the outdoors. You know, I climb, you know, I was way into kind of ultra running and adventure racing most of my life. And just get outside. You know, I mean, like, our company isn't just preaching like buy our supplements because they're going to make you better. Like, we're actually saying like, get outdoors, be active. you know, you're going to be a better version of yourself. And if you're outside, you're going to actually absorb more vitamin D. You're going to be a healthier version.
Connect with people.
You build some connections.
Right.
But like, that's the, you know, for us is like, we want people to kind of pick up routines that are going to make them healthy.
That's cool.
And the next iteration of kind of products that we have coming down the pipe are like, you know, we have an effervescent BCAA tab. So you have to add it to water. And then we got four different liquid packs that all have to be added to water. We have a sleep, a hydration, an energy, and an immunity. So kind of baseline things for just general wellness and health. But the common ground between all of those is that you need to put them in water.
Okay.
And, you know, I'm a huge proponent now of proper hydration.
Yes.
I was not my entire life. I think I was perpetually dehydrated.
I think it's like another team guy mantra.
Right. Never drink water.
Never drink water and don't eat.
Yeah, don't eat. And I drink a bunch of coffee, energy drinks, and alcohol.
Right.
So, all the things that like don't help you sleep.
Exactly. Yeah.
So, like for me, hydration, the reason I wasn't hydrating because I'm an idiot, I thought that like I would weigh less as a climber because I had less water weight. So stupid, right? Like, so I'm like, I actually found out that it actually does the opposite.
Right.
You retain water when you're like,
right, because your body's like,
you're not putting enough water in.
Everybody's like, hey, hold up, I gotta hold on to this.
So I learned just through some research, that if you actually stay hydrated, your body sheds excess water weight, and you're lighter. And by the way, what the other thing I found is that my skin was healthier. So like, I actually like as a climber, like my skin was always tattered.
Yeah,
and my skin was healthier because I was hydrating more. So I got lighter. And my skin was better.
Boom, hydration.
And then the other thing that I've now realized in the last couple of years on this kind of journey to get better, right? To be a better version of myself is that, you know, sleep is so critically important.
Oh man.
It's like the number one performance enhancer, period. And hydration, you know, hydration and then vitamin D, you know, exposure to kind of, you know, sunlight.
Yeah.
Sets you up for solid restful sleep.
Right, for sure. Like it kind of sets your internal clock mechanism, right?
Yeah.
Like exactly. Like I've been a huge proponent of sleep as well. I remember being on an deployment in 2012 on my last deployment in 2012 and just being and getting so much sleep on that deployment for some reason. It wasn't the best sleep, but it was like I was getting a lot of it. And so I think the accumulation of however much sleep I was getting was great. And I just remember like, because you know, no matter what kind of deployment on, you're always going to get, you always have a lot of time, you know, because you take care of work and then you get to do whatever you want to do, right?
Contrary to the public belief that like you're just in battle for 24 hours a day.
Right. No, especially towards the back end of my career where, you know, things were pretty slow. But I just remember being like, man, I am like, my workout numbers overseas were like going to the roof. And I just remember calling back to a buddy being like, dude, you got to try this supplement. Like it is so ridiculous. I'm getting so fast and strong and everything. And he's like, what is it? I'm like, it's sleep. I was literally sleeping for like 10 to 11 hours every single night. And like everything, my numbers were going through the roof. And it was just,
Lo and behold, you produce all these awesome hormones naturally,
and,
right?
And your body recovers. Exactly. It's like, and your brain feels good. It's amazing. And I think ever since that deployment actually is when I started to sleep terribly, at home at least. Mm-hmm. And so I've been a huge proponent of like anything that I can do to fix my sleep. Like I don't drink hardly ever anymore because if I have two or more beers, like I'm not sleeping very well.
It destroys your sleep.
Destroys it. I have blackout shades. Mm-hmm. I have a chili pad. You ever heard of a chili pad?
Dude, I need to get one, man.
Bro, it's worth it.
I know, Peter Attia talks about them a lot. Dude.
I was a little skeptical at first and I was like, and I got it. And now when I have to like travel and I don't have it, it's very noticeable. How hot I get at nighttime without that, like, you know, pad there basically cooling me off. It's a phenomenal tool. And like, I do not have any affiliation with Chili Pad. I literally bought mine. And so, it has definitely helped with sleep. I wear like earplugs at night because like I'm such a light sleeper. Yeah. That any little noise will wake me up.
I black out. I wear eye shades at night.
Yeah.
I never did that, and I always used to like look at it and be like, it's like for like wealth, like upper class women wear them. I'm not going to put a silk eye shade over my eyes at night. Yeah. Like I'm not, well, who am I? Right. Yeah. Like, dude, it has been a game changer, man. Like, yeah. Because I am very sensitive to light.
Right.
You know, yeah. For me, like it's like if there's any light in the room.
And lights is basically cueing your body that, hey, it's time to get up.
Yeah,
it's literally sending signals to your brain.
Yeah.
Hey, wake up.
When we slept outside.
Yeah.
You would wake up when the sun came
when
up.
The sun
right?
came
up,
right? Right? Yeah.
So yeah, no, dude. And like, and same thing goes for, you know, phone, we talk like, about distractions with yeah. phone. Like I try to like, you know, I set my screen so it dims at night
yeah.
and then I try to not touch it. Like if I'm getting ready to go to bed
yeah.
within like an hour of sleep, I make a conscious effort to not have my phone on and in front of my face.
Right. I struggle because I like built a very awful habit of watching TV to go to bed. And I have a really hard time going to bed without the TV on. And I still haven't gotten past that. And I, you know, it could be definitely a reason why I don't sleep as well as I should. But I, you know,
we all have our flaws.
We all have our flaws, right? I'm weak when it comes to TV
at
night.
He can't meditate. He watches TV at night.
So weak. Go punch myself in the face.
You should just get an ice bath.
I'm just getting the ice bath right now. Make myself feel tough. But yeah, no, sleep is huge. It's a huge tool for recovery. And exactly. Like listening to a great, I think Dr. Matthew Walker was on, he was on Joe Rogan's podcast and he was on Peter Attia's. And if you could, he was on Peter Attia's and it was a 3-part podcast. And I want to say it was 5 hours total. And I listened to all of it with like zero realization that it was literally 5 hours long. I was like, it was so interesting
yeah.
and informative that I like, and it wasn't boring at all because it's like, man, like he breaks down all the, people who are using marijuana to try to sleep and alcohol or all the different like things you can use, all the like supplementation kind of thing to help yourself sleep. And basically just saying which ones are good, which ones are bad and stuff like that. And so if you have a chance, go out and listen to that. Peter Attia, it's a great podcast. I don't know Peter, but I do listen to his podcast and I know he's here local in San Diego.
Oh, I didn't know that.
I'm pretty sure he is. Yeah.
Okay.
But yeah. Super, super intelligent guy.
Yeah.
And that, yeah.
Yeah. He's a huge proponent of sleep and fasting, I believe.
Yeah. Yeah.
But sleep is like the best thing you can do for yourself.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's, I mean, I've known personally, like hydration and sleep are like, that's what I focus on.
Huge.
You know, if I'm doing that right, I'm going to perform better. I'm going to be a better version of myself. And then, you know, the meditation thing has been new within the last year and a half, but you know, I'm sticking with it. You know, I've seen such a profound improvement in myself on multiple fronts.
Yeah.
You know, not just physical too, you know, for me, you know, on an emotional level and then, you know, spiritual level too, like, you know, I've tapped back into that, you know, and I had stepped away from, you know, my connection to religion or God or any of that for a long time. And, you know, I kind of look at my meditation now too, is like, it's almost synonymous with prayer. You know, it gives me a quiet moment just to reflect and think about the things that I'm thankful for. You know, allow me to kind of show gratitude for the things I have in this life and the people that I'm surrounded by. So yeah, multiple fronts. It's just been an amazing addition.
That's great, man.
Yeah, dude.
Well, awesome, brother. Well, it's been an hour.
Yeah.
I mean, I could sit here and chat with you for 5 hours.
Well, it's not like it'll just come to an end and we're never going to see each other.
You're right. Like the conversation is going to come to an end on this podcast, but we're going to go hit the sauna, do a little sauna sesh.
We're going to do like 45 minutes in the sauna.
Minimum at 200 degrees. So, no, man, I really appreciate you coming on and having this conversation. And you know, I'm just thankful that you're back in my life and
that
we get to hang out more too, and
Yeah,
man. And then tell the people, give them, you know, like where to find your ProTac at and
good stuff. So Protect Products is our website, Protect with a K. At Protect Life is our Instagram handle. And then you can look up my ugly mug. I got a, you know, if you put Nick Norris into Instagram, Nick Norris, I think _1981. I don't even know my own Instagram handle, but You'll notice I'm the guy wearing a hat with a CK4, you got on right now,
right.
In my picture. So yeah. And that's in the other thing that, like, you know, I'm very passionate about is the, you know, the C4 Foundation. It's named after, one of our buddies that, you know, gave his life in defense of, you know, our country and our freedom. Charles Humphrey Keating IV, he was killed 4 years ago in Mosul during combat operations. And, you know, heavily involved, you know, Josh has been a supporter, kind of giving some shout outs and really kind of raising some awareness. And,
Chuck was a great dude.
Yeah. No, awesome, man. So his legacy's living on. You know, we got a piece of property outside of San Diego. We're building up to be a, you call it like a sanctuary for like active duty SEALs and their families to connect.
Yeah.
Get back to connection, man.
I love it, dude. I love it. It's so awesome. Yeah. Charlie was awesome. I went through Bud's SQT and, all of my deployments with Charlie. And then he went on and did more. And that, you know, when he was killed in, you know, was it 2016?
16, yeah.
2016. So, yeah. So that's awesome. Yeah. I meant to bring up the C4 Foundation.
Yeah.
So but I'm glad you did.
Yeah. Yeah. It's close to us, you know?
Yeah.
And, and the goal, I mean, they kind of, we could piggyback on the entire conversation we just had. I mean, it's all about connection. And we look at the ability to create that connection early on is probably the best thing that we can do for the active duty component is, you know, allowing people to connect deeper with their families and then with each other's families. So you can build that support network.
Yeah.
And hopefully it's a preemptive attack, not a reactive approach to, you know, all the, you know, the things that guys are, you know, the veteran community is dealing with.
Right.
So, you know, the hope long-term is that this becomes a beta that, you know, other services can follow and set up these type of nature-based retreat centers, you know, for their families. So that's
great stuff right there.
Yeah.
Yeah. So go check out that. Yeah. Check that out at C4Foundation.org. Yeah. So, all right, Nick, love you, buddy.
Love you too, bro. I say that more often.
No, love it. All right, guys. That's it for today. Hope you enjoyed it. And as always, don't forget to pay the man.